It's football at four. Here's The Drive with Tom Nalen and D-Mac.
How good do you think this Broncos rushing attack is? Cecil Lammy sitting in for D-Mac today. Because our friends over at SB Nation have ranked the top running backs groups in the NFL. If you were to guess, Tommy, where would the Broncos rank?
I know what it is, but I'd guess they'd be in the top 15.
Would you believe that they are ranked number 3 for running back groups as a whole?
Well, you got Jano, so he's as good as...
You had 22 of those.
22 of those.
You'd be undefeated. Okay, the rankings of the running backs, and this is, again, the entire room. San Francisco is listed at number 1, although all these guys seem to be banged up right now. With Matt Breida, Tevin Coleman, Jerick McKinnon, Kyle Juszczyk, their fullback. The Patriots are number 2. Sony Michel, James White, Damian Harris, Rex Burkhead, James Devlin, their fullback. And then, lo and behold, there's the Denver Broncos. Philip Lindsay, Royce Freeman, Devontae Booker, Andy Janovich. And they're the 3rd best running back room in the league?
This is assuming full health for Philip Lindsay.
Very true.
Well, it just goes to show how unimportant I think teams look at the running game now. I mean, the first 3 all have fullbacks, sort of a dying breed position.
Right.
So that's the intent of a lot of these teams is balance, is to play physical at times. San Francisco is Mike Shanahan offense. We know what the Patriots are with Devlin. I mean, that dude's a massive, huge fullback.
So unfair they got Damian Harris, too, in the 3rd round, the Alabama kid. Not Josh Jacobs, the other one. Like, he can be significant for them, and he was a 3rd round pick. So the Broncos at number 3 overall with that fullback, is this just a factor of...
Where's George the Animal Aster? Aston.
Aston.
Aster.
Aster. He's just no neck. That's what
George
I call
the
him.
George the Animal.
No neck. The Broncos at number 3 is a little bit surprising based on behind Lindsay and Freeman. Leave the fullbacks out of this. But Devontae Booker's your 3rd back?
No NFL team is stacked with elite running backs. Your 3rd running back is generally just a guy, a change of pace type guy, or a work in progress type guy. He's not vying for the starting job type guy. New England's kind of weird because you never know. They all are very similar. They all kind of, but they use them in certain situations.
The Lions have a better number 3 back than the Broncos do. The Lions have a better number 3 back than the Broncos do. His name's CJ Anderson. You know,
which CJ is it?
Fat CJ.
Yeah.
End of the year CJ, right?
CJ's up and down.
End of the year CJ is really
end of the year Ram CJ?
Or Broncos CJ.
That weight helps him at the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's a punishing style running back. And we talked about it yesterday. It depends on defense, but those last 4 games, teams might be beat up, ready to go on vacation.
1-2-3 Cancun. The Browns have a better number 3 running back than the Broncos. He's just suspended. His name's Kareem Hunt.
Yeah, that's not...
If you take full running back runs...
How do you put Kareem Hunt in there when he's missing half the year? It's 8 games still, right?
Yeah.
He didn't appeal that or anything.
I don't know if he was allowed to. But I look at it and I go, okay, as a running back room, Booker doesn't make that grade a little bit lower?
I always had high hopes for Booker.
They did too. They almost took him in the 1st round.
But he came off an injury, and I felt like, well, you know, his rookie year is going to be hit or miss. But I thought he'd develop into a good running back.
Wasn't hit or miss for Philip Lindsay. Like, rookie running backs, like rookie tight ends, I'm with you all day. Rookie wide receivers, I'm with you all day. Rookie running back? You better come in and look good.
But Phillip wasn't coming off an injury. Didn't Booker, he didn't finish the year.
He's had troubles with injuries dating back to his days at Utah.
But he's talented. There is talent there.
He's a great pass catcher. He has great hands. Like, phenomenal hands.
So why don't you just take the view of, well, this guy's good at this, and Phillip and Freeman can be those that 1-2 punch, and Booker can be the, you know, he can run screens and give you that option third downs, that guy out of the backfield.
I just want because more Phillip doing I just, that.
The running back rooms I was always around, you had a couple guys that were very similar, and then one guy that was like this one-off. And whether it's Von Hebron, remember Von Hebron?
Oh, yeah. Quentin Griffin.
Griffin.
Yeah, little guy from Oklahoma.
Right, but there was always like one
that didn't fit
in with the others.
Okay.
And he was your change-up, they called it change-up pace back.
Glenn Milburn was that.
Glenn Milburn, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah, called him Bambi.
Called him Bambi?
Yeah, I don't know why.
Deer great headlights?
Dude. No.
No?
Like kind of ran like Bambi, like a deer.
Okay.
But no, I don't think it was a complimentary term. He's a great dude. That's a good pull right there. But I think a lot of these...
Ebron and these rooms, Glenn wore the same number. 22.
22. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that was when we had like Rod Bernstein running the ball.
Converted so tight end Rod Bernstein.
He was 6'3", 230. Huge. And Glenn Milburn was in the room too. So it was like, what are we doing here? So I think the makeup of the room, I like the fact that there are different styles of running backs. Now, you want the first two to be similar because of injuries and because that guy's not, the every down back is a thing of the past.
These first two aren't similar, though.
But they're going to be when they're running the ball. You want those two guys to be similar in how that they, we were talking about yesterday, how TD and Olandis and Mike Anderson and Portis and Tatum Bell, they weren't all similar, but they ran the ball to the point of attack similar. And then that's where all similarities ended.
But don't you want your third guy to be that change of pace to do something like really good? With Booker, you have a drop-off. You have a severe drop-off that you don't with other teams. I can go on and name other third running backs and bore everybody, but there's a lot better number three running backs in the league than Devontae Booker.
Well, that just means that they value what Phillip Lindsay did last year much higher than other your number one running back kind of raises the tide of the whole group. I'm surprised the Jets aren't up here. Just on one guy alone.
Just on Le'Veon Bell.
That's what I mean. I think if you have a premium back, your whole room is better.
They have Ty Montgomery behind him.
Didn't he used to be a receiver at one point?
Yeah, he still wears 88, or at least he did with the Packers.
Still doesn't look right.
Looks weird.
It does.
Don't wear 88 when you're running back. All right, well, we'll see if the Broncos can stack up to this lofty
just because
ranking.
There's a drop-off at third means that they value 1 and 2 more.
1 and 2 are among the best in the league, best young running back duo in the league.
I'd rather have 2 above average and 1 below average than 3 average or 3 very good and 1 great. I'd rather have better at the top of the room.
They have great, very good, and below average. That's 1, 2, and 3. Great, very good, and well below average.
Assuming Phillip's healthy.
Yes. Well, we're making an assumption about Chris Harris that a lot of you don't like. We tell you what that is, and if we're right, next.
Back to The Drive with Tom Nalen and D-Mac.
Oh, yeah. I mean, everybody's definitely giving them a shot. Definitely. I mean, I'm not never going to count out. Like I told y'all earlier, the situation was could always be salvaged and worked out. So I'm going to go do my thing, and then at the end of the year or whatever, whenever I'm definitely giving them a fair chance, for sure.
There's Chris Harris Jr. saying he'd give the Broncos a fair chance next year, as he will be an unrestricted free agent. Cecil Lammy sitting in for D-Mac. Tommy, do you believe this is Chris Harris Jr.'s last season? Are we correct to assume that? Do you assume
last
that?
Season in Denver?
Yes.
No.
No.
No. I think he wants to stay here. Why would getting $3 million free dollars indicate that he would be angry at the team and not willing to re-sign here? They did him a solid.
He's the fourth cornerback this year in 2019 cash, and then after this year, well, he hit free agency and be the number one, is what he thinks. You think it was a good faith move, though? You think that actually exists?
Good faith in that they believe that he was willing to sit out at least part of the year because he's unhappy with his contract.
I don't think there's any way he would ever do that.
Well, then why did they pay him?
It's either a good faith move or it's a PR move where they can say, well, we tried, and he leaves next year, and they go, well, we tried. I mean, look at us. We just tried. It's one of those two things, dude.
I think they believed he was going to sit.
Why would a 30-year-old corner going into free agency sit out, what, 10 games, 5 games? Give me a number. Like, why would you do that? Makes no sense.
Stay fresh. Become a free agent. Okay. Less chance of injury.
Okay, and people will bring up Le'Veon Bell.
And still getting a Le'Veon Bell basically didn't make any more. I mean, he lost a year of, what, $14 million? Is that what the franchise was?
But he was not under contract at the time.
Right.
He didn't sign any sort of tag, so... It's different from Harris's situation.
But it's a similar sentiment, as in he didn't feel like in the NFL, a coach can praise you, they can do whatever they want, but the only way in the NFL to get respect is money, period. And if you feel like you're disrespected from a money standpoint, especially when they signed Kareem Jackson, making him the second highest paid cornerback on the team, there's a level of disrespect from Chris Harris Jr., no doubt about it. So, I think the Broncos felt like there was a chance that he was going to sit out at least a portion of the year. They want 2000. They do not want to have three losing seasons in a row. John Elway doesn't want that on his legacy. So they did whatever it could to get him here.
So it's about winning more than about doing the right thing by him or having a PR move for next year to say, well, we tried. We gave him free money.
No, I think it's about winning. They did whatever they could to win in 2019. If it means giving him $3 million on top of his already contract, whatever. It's not my money. It's not your money. It's not John Elway's money. They figured out a way that they could do it and not hurt them in the cap. Man, it's win-win. The dude deserved it. I mean, when you look at the corners around the league, for 2019 only, and his base was 7-8, and Bradley Roby's was 9-5 plus 500 bonus or something.
He was 25th in the league.
That's not right. The Broncos didn't even make an offer for Bradley Roby. So I want the best team on the field and the best team on the field. D-Mac said it yesterday. He goes, when Chris Harris practiced yesterday, you could see it. Like the missing piece of the puzzle was there with the defense. So he goes, all of a sudden, everything makes sense. But it doesn't make sense if Chris Harris is not a part of it. Then the Kareem Jackson signing isn't so much about, then he's forced into playing corner more and not being that weapon to use against tight ends. So it weakens everything. I just think they believe that he was going to sit out a part of the season.
And if that's what they believe,
the NFL does not give out free money. They don't do it for PR. They don't do it for just because Chris is a good guy they didn't do it because Chris Harris played well in 2018 and 17 and 16 and 15 and that's not why they did it. They gave him money because they're expecting him to play well in 2019. That's it. Whatever happens in 2020, who cares? We're win now mode because 2020 could be Drew Lock as your starting quarterback. And then realistically, are we really making a push for the Super Bowl? Because I think realistically, 2019, John Elway is looking at this as a push to the Super Bowl.
Is it the last window for some of these older players?
Derek Wolfe. Gotsis is up. Wolf is up.
Justin Simmons, not older, but his contract is up. Will Parks' contract is up. Yeah, by the way,
they're the same year.
I don't know if this makes much sense. But Will Parks played a lot with Chris Harris out there. Like, Parks was barely used, so much so that you thought, where's Will Parks? And then when Chris Harris Jr. was out there on Wednesday, yesterday, all of a sudden Will Parks is playing all the time.
Well, it's OTAs, though, and rotations and things like that occur. And Vic Fangio said that Chris Harris is only getting two reps at a time,
so right.
Which messes up the whole rotations anyways. I don't think you can read too much into it, but I think they're rotating guys in to give them a shot with the ones to see how they react and to see if there's a fall off or to see if they make the ones better. So I wouldn't read into the reps between Chris Harris. It's not like Chris Harris went up to Ed Donatell and go, look, if I'm out there, Will Parks is out there with
Parks
me.
With me.
Yeah, that does not happen.
They tried that combination.
This is not LeBron James here.
No, it isn't. Chris Harris Jr. is a team-first guy who wants to be here. I believe him wholeheartedly when he says he wants to retire a Bronco. I just can't make that statement.
I don't know if the Broncos want him to retire a Bronco. We'll find out.
Yeah, and that's the factor. Like, he wants to stay here, like you said. Should we assume that he's gone after this year? No, but do they want him? Because if they wanted him, you would have extended him. If you really, really wanted him past this year, and what happened to win from now on? Are we finally at a point where Elway will say we got to rebuild if 2019 goes off the rails?
Maybe this is a corner they like next year coming out. I think they liked Rocky Sin, but he went too early.
Well, we'll see. They, instead of going with Rocky Sin, went with Drew Lock, a player who may be a lot less flawed than some of you think. A national analyst. Think the Broncos might have got a gem here. We go over that next.
It's The Drive with Tom Nalen and D-Mac.
Number 37 is Drew Lock. Missouri, Denver Broncos. Yes. Yep. I mean, hey, listen, I thought he was better than Dwayne Haskins coming out of the draft. I thought it was very close. There's a number of things I like about him. Again, athletic as can be. I mean, I don't want to say as can be. He's not Kyler Murray or Michael Vick, but extremely athletic to where he's going to run out of the pocket and make some big time plays on the run or running out of the pocket, setting up and maybe throwing a laser across the other side of the field. He kind of got that John Elway, Aaron Rodgers type vibe, Patrick Mahomes, as far as when it comes to, you know, backyard school type football. He can do that. The knock on him is going to be last year he had some questionable decisions at times where he threw some dumb interceptions. Now, one, their offense was not very good last year, and they were coached like crap too. There's just nothing else I can say. It was one of the most unimpressive offenses I saw, so that didn't help him out. When he was coached a little bit better the year before, he led college football in touchdown passes. So, you know, some of the knocks about him coming on the draft I think are not fair all the way, but I think Drew Lock's got big time talent.
There is Chris Sims talking about lasers. I had to. I couldn't help it. Laser. Rocket arm for Drew Lock, ranking him number 37 out of the top 40 quarterbacks in the NFL. Somebody likes Drew Lock
without taking a snap.
Right.
It's weird, and his affection for him is based on his ability to get out of the pocket and throw the ball.
Right. He can run.
Well, that's last resort in the NFL. You don't see Mahomes taking off unless he has to. Remember, that left-handed pass against the Broncos was because Vaughn was breathing down his neck.
Right.
And had he tried to throw it in his right hand, it was probably a strip. Because Vaughn was damn near about to get him.
He was in his jock strap. He was right there. And that's why Mahomes did the left-handed pass. So,
but if you're basing all of it on his ability to run the ball in the NFL, you need to see him throw the ball with accuracy from the pocket. That's where NFL quarterbacks make their money. It's not running around, because you don't last long that way.
Ask Cam Newton, who, by the way, says now after yet another shoulder surgery, he's not going to change his style. Well, and I don't think Drew Lock's Cam Newton. I think he might be Jay Cutler, but a Jay Cutler that cares. When I say that, having played with Jay and knowing his talent, when I say Drew Lock is like if Jay Cutler cared, what do you think of that?
I think Jay Cutler cared. I think he wanted to be a great quarterback. I don't think he cared about how he was viewed as his relationship with the teammates or coaches or anything. He was you know, he didn't make that connection with teammates for the most part. I mean, he hung out with Tony Scheffler and Brandon Marshall, and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think to be truly a quarterback that cares fully is, yeah, you got to know the playbook, but you also have to, you know, communicate with teammates. And Jay Cutler wasn't that guy. He's just different. But I think he tried. I mean, Mike Shanahan, the reason Jay Cutler was a Bronco was because Mike Shanahan, we just came off the Pittsburgh loss, and Mike Shanahan was the coach in the Pro Bowl, and he became enamored with Peyton Manning, who was playing in the Pro Bowl, and he spent a week with him. And he went into the draft thinking, I want me a Peyton Manning. And that's where Jay Cutler came. He figured, you know, he's smart. He's got an excellent arm. But Peyton Manning it almost ruined Mike's idea of quarterbacks, because Peyton Manning is, there isn't a Peyton, there's no other Peyton Manning.
Right.
That he's dude different. Was 100% football. That's all he cares about. And he made sure that the 10 guys in the huddle were caring about football as well, where Jay didn't do that. So to make the comparison with Drew Lock caring, I think Drew is a completely different personality and excellent arm, needs some work, but he has time. Whereas Mike felt like, well, I can't wait any longer. Let's get him in there. And Jay didn't have that relationship with the team. And talent-wise, he was ready, but just to lead a football team. And that's what the quarterback is the leader of the offense, if right. not the whole team.
You guys had a winning record going into that Chiefs game.
We were 7-3, I think, lost.
And then he pulled the plug.
Crushed. Then we had 10 days off, and Mike felt like, well, this is a good time to make the change. And we ended up 8-8 or 9-7, missed the playoffs.
That was the first Thursday night game ever, wasn't it?
On NFL Network.
Yes,
on NFL Network. It was on Thanksgiving. Yep. Mm-hmm. There were two other games, but it was the first. We were the night game.
They came back with a pre-recorded F-bomb. anyway.
It was a work in progress at that point.
It was a work in progress at that point. Drew Lock at number 37. That's it's a little rich because you got 32 starting quarterbacks. So you're saying he's right there.
He's 37?
37 out of 40.
So he's like
he's one of the top backups.
Let's
in the
go
league.
33 out of 64. So he's let's go because we're talking backups here.
Okay.
So they're not putting him in front of. I would assume he's not in front of any starter.
He's fourth, right, or fifth?
Right. Without taking a snap.
Without taking a snap. Fifth best backup in the league. Do you believe that?
It's hard to believe because Chris Simms is basing it on watching him at college and seeing him scramble and throw the ball.
Right.
Which is a risky assessment. I mean, if that's all he's basing it on.
On Monday.
I would love that. That would be fantastic as a rookie that he's one of the top backups in the league. And a lot of the backups have been around. I think the Chiefs have Chad Henne, who's been around forever.
Mm-hmm.
That's who he's competing against. And if they have him ranked higher than a Chad Henne, who's been around the NFL for a while, that's huge if that's accurate.
That's significant.
For 2019. Because
right.
that bodes well for 2020.
Well, if he's 37 out of 40, he's probably above guys even like Tyrod Taylor. You know, guys experienced backups
See,
in the league now.
That's probably what Chris Simms is basing it on, because he's seen he's comparing them to guys that he's seen play in the NFL.
So he has a bias against the guys that have actually played
right,
in the NFL.
Because he's seen them fail in different spots, because backups are well-traveled and they've dabbled as starters.
Mm-hmm. I like when you say dabble.
Dabbled. They're dabblers.
They're into dabbling. Okay, Drew Lock at 37. I'm excited about the kid. I know what he has to work on. Has to work up clean up his footwork. Has to change that arm angle because his arm will drop. And he loves it. He loves the fact that he can sidearm throws and make it. But he does it when nobody's around him. Like, do that when there's a defensive lineman in your face, but don't just do it because.
How would you have assessed Phillip Rivers as a rookie, watching him throw the ball?
I knew.
Would you say that he needs to change his mechanics?
No, because, one, he was one of the most accurate passers all time in college football history. He was like 75% passer at NC State. And, two, I knew he was a coach's son that had been throwing that way since he was 11 years old, because he would go to his dad's high school practices, and he had high school football, but he's 11, so he had the little tiny hands, and he'd do that little sidearm thing. So a guy like Phillip Rivers, that's kind of set. I just want Drew Locke's arm angle to be consistent because it is maddeningly, whatever, inconsistent.
Angry.
Dabbling. It's so inconsistent for no reason. Like, it's almost random where he's going to release the ball from, and I don't like that.
But maybe in the way he's thrown the ball his whole life is the inconsistent way is his consistent way that he throws at different.
He's consistent with his inconsistency?
Right.
I feel like it's a philosophical thing here.
Yeah.
I'd like better arm angle, and I'd like better footwork.
The footwork's more the, for me, it's more important because this is a wide variety of how guys throw the football in the NFL. Nobody's the same. They're all different, one way or another. But the footwork thing is much more important for me. Setting your feet, throwing into it. It's too risky, the back foot throws in the
NFL.
Which
he does a lot.
So it's about the footwork. It's not running the ball and running around and throwing the ball. That's schoolyard. Tim Tebow is very good at that. It's footwork within the pocket. Hopefully he's not running around with Garrett Bowles blocking for him.
Hopefully he's climbing the ladder and getting rid of the ball quickly. We shall see. Also, we'll see a DMAC live tweeting. He's sick. He's at home. Took the day. Took a Roby day. He took the day off.
He did Roby us.
He did Roby. He Robied the
he
fan.
Had a bad day. He had a bad day yesterday on the radio, so he Robied us today.
Robied.
Didn't want to answer to his radio.
Robied it up. Dabbling. He's dabbling in the Spelling Bee finals. Tommy and I are going to go toe-to-toe in that next.
You're listening to The Drive with Tom Nalen and D-Mac.
All right, it's Spelling Bee time. Because the National Spelling Bee finals are tonight at 6:30. D-Mac's been live tweeting the entire round today. Is there anything better to do? Like get better? Heal up? Twitter is a wicked mistress, man. You know that. That's why you got rid of it. Like,
yes.
you can spend a lot of time on there.
The one that is sick and has missed work should be resting and probably, I would tell my kids, no electronics. Give me the phone. Give me a computer. Pull the shade. Get some rest. You got to go to school tomorrow.
Drink plenty of water.
But if the kids don't want to go to school tomorrow, or in the case of DMAC, you don't want to go work tomorrow.
Roby day.
You're not resting at all. You're going to milk this for all it's worth.
How can you spell sore throat? What's he have? What's he think he has?
He's nothing.
He thinks he has strep throat or something?
No. He was feeling better.
Laryngitis. I can't spell that, right? Laryngitis. There you go.
He was fine yesterday. His voice just sounded like Johnny Most. I mean, it was brutal.
Sounded like Pharrell on the bench.
Yeah.
Pharrell on the
bench. He sounded exactly like that dude.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Except it hurt when he
swallowing
talked.
Broken glass.
He's a glass eater, that D-Mac. That's an offensive lineman term.
Glass eater?
Glass eater, yeah. You never heard that?
Mm-mm.
Scouting term? Glass eater. You know my scouting terms.
Yes.
Glass eater.
They're hilarious.
They're awesome.
What does glass eater mean?
That means you're like super mean. You're glass eater.
Mean?
Yes. Quentin Nelson? Glass eater.
Okay.
D-Mac? Also. Glass eater. For different reasons, though.
Has Garrett Bowles ever nibbled on glass?
I don't think so. By the way, Richie, a producer here on The Drive, you are going to give us a spelling bee? I wasn't prepared for this.
I know, I didn't tell you on purpose, but I felt like in the spirit of the National Spelling Bee, it happens every year at this time. I feel like this is something
you should participate. Had you been apprised of this and had known, what would you have done?
Nothing. No preparation whatsoever. Although I was a pretty good speller back in the day.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know this.
Yes. Find out.
You brought in a ringer, Richie?
Well, this is good because I've got a list of words that were actually used in this year's spelling bee, too, that like some of these kids got right. So I don't know if that'll make you feel better or worse.
So it's three words, winner take all, me versus Tommy. Cecil versus Tom.
Who wants
Big
to go
Mex
first?
Versus the Nailinator. I don't know. What was your nickname? Radio friendly nicknames.
This is Nails, Booger.
Booger?
I don't know. Grimace.
Grimace.
I have a purplish tint, a purplish hue to my skin at times.
His best friend's the Hamburglar?
Yes. The Fry Guys.
Okay. It's Big Macs versus Grimace. Richie, what do you got?
All right. Well, Cece, we'll have you go first with this one. Your word is crystallographer.
Crystallographer?
Correct.
C-R-Y-S-T-A-L-O-G-R-A-P-H-E-R.
Oh, it's close.
There's, O-R.
There's two L's. It's C-R-Y-S-T-A-L-L.
Crystallographer.
Crystallographer.
Okay. I got that wrong. So, what?
Can
is that a point for
Tommy? Can I write it down at all? Can I write the word down as I'm spelling
it? I'm so confused by these rules.
Did they get paper?
No, you can't write it down. They're standing up in front of a microphone.
I don't know. I've never really watched. They don't have...
I'll give you guys different words. So, Tom...
Well, yeah, because you just corrected the spelling. Right. So. But I can't write it down.
I mean, I don't know how that would help you. If you don't know how to spell it, what is writing it down going to do?
Because I will look
at it.
You know, when you look at a word, it looks
phonetically.
Weird.
All right, go ahead and write it down. I'll give you that. That's a handicap, though, so there's an asterisk on this victory already.
He's already calling
on
it a
this victory.
On the second question, you've already counted me out, Richie.
All right, give me it.
Tommy, your word is parvenuism.
Parvenuism. Par? What's the origin?
Oh, my gosh. I'd have to look it up.
Is it Aramaic? Greek?
Highlight it, right-click, and search Google.
Right. Paravenuism? I'll give you that it's a noun. That's about
all. It is a noun?
Paravenuism?
Can you use it in a sentence, please?
Wait, did you say paravenue? Parvenue.
Just so you know, the kids on this show don't get this kind of...
Yes, they do. They get to ask the origin, and they get to ask, can you use it in a sentence, right?
Parvenuism.
Parvenuism.
Par.
Now ask Richie to use it in a sentence. Richie, if you're going to have rules for us, we're going to have rules for you, bro.
Parvenuism.
These kids get to do that.
What I wrote down cannot be right because it seems too easy, but I'm going to go with it.
There is an element of parvenuism about him.
Wow. It sounds like something to describe D-Mac. I'm gonna change how I did this.
Okay.
No. I think there might be an F or an H in there, but
maybe get that ticking.
Parvenuism. It's the P, right?
You were close. It was just one letter off, like Cecil's. It's parvenuism.
Oh, they dropped the E?
They dropped the E.
Oh, you're kidding me.
Oh, that's cheating. Okay, so we're both 0 for 0.
0 for 0.
Okay.
We might have to do
a tiebreaker?
We can make it that. We'll see how this goes.
Okay.
Cecil, your word is plumiferous.
Can you use it in a sentence?
Gosh, you made me do this right.
Plumiferous? Now. Yeah, you
weren't prepared at all, were you?
Listen, I thought you guys would
he
just
thought
throw
he was going to embarrass
there.
Us. In turn, we're turning it back on him. Plumiferous. Plumiferous. And I'm going to go ahead and start.
You're not going to read
while
it?
He
You're
looks
not
up
write
the
it down?
Origin. I did write it down. Right. You just can't read my handwriting. Yeah. Plumiferous.
Would you like me to use it in a sentence?
Yes, please.
Whether he used a plumiferous or lead gaze.
Oh, I got it.
Or a staniferous or tin glaze, we do not know.
Now I'm changing it. I'm changing it based on him reading a sentence. See? This is why the kids get to do that. Plumiferous.
Oh.
Is it ER?
No, I feel like whatever you were going with the first time was probably play right.
That was actually
plumbiferous.
Oh, that's
I think
plum
you said
crazy.
It wrong. That's plum. Plumbiferous.
It's
you said the word wrong.
I'm
Wait a second, we're
the,
supposed
I'm
to be against
at the
each
phonetic
other.
Pronunciation. Maybe I am saying it wrong, but I'm looking at the pronunciation here. That's about what it seems.
Plumiferous. What does it mean?
Yielding or containing lead.
Yes. I was going to call you on you said asterisk. It's isk.
Did I not say asterisk?
Asterisk.
Asterisk.
You said
Can you not say asterisk?
The text line's calling you out on that.
Did he say asterisk?
He did.
It ain't Rick Astley, bro. Like, you seriously can't say asterisk?
Asterisk.
There you go.
Okay. All right. All right.
You had to slow down to say it, though.
Yeah, maybe. Okay.
Okay. I don't know if that was a great
This
bit,
is the moderator
or that
can't
was horrible.
Say a... What?
I don't know if it was great or if it was horrible. I can't tell.
What?
Text line, tell us. RamosLaw.com text line. 303-713-1043. Because I think Richie... He was trying to embarrass us.
How was I trying to embarrass you? I looked
up
the words.
By making a spell plumiferous and vociferous or whatever that other one was. Like,
well, I can't throw you softball ones. Those kids don't get.
Those kids have been practicing their entire lives. This was sprung on
us. But they're like 11.
So they're smarter than me.
Probably.
I can guarantee you none of them put a helmet on and lost brain cells that way.
I can guarantee they would turn up their nose to Michigan State.
None of these kids are future Spartans, that's for sure.
Yeah, no. They're Ivy.
Go ahead. Give me a word.
Oh, you want another one?
What was that gesture you just gave?
Okay. All right, Tommy. Come on, you got to get this one. Woe begonness.
That one's easy.
Woe begotten.
That one's easy. Woe begottenness.
No, not got. Woe begonness.
What?
Woe begonness.
Woe begonness?
I'm just going straight out. Woebegonness.
Nailed it.
It's exactly like it sounds.
Yeah.
That was fairly easy. I'll be honest with you.
All right, Cecil, you want another one? No, because you got to get this one.
It's like a shootout in hockey. You got to get this.
I got to get this, or else Tommy Nalen wins.
This one's not too bad.
Our spelling is D-Mac tweeting about this. By the way, I want to know that
he should be.
He tweeted about the whole round, the first round of the spelling bee.
You got screwed on the silent
B. Was pretty.
The moderator can't even say it correctly.
I'm not sure that you know how to pronounce it. I feel like you're just throwing that out there.
You're looking at the
Richie, you have to know the rules. You have to know the Jeff Brantley rules. If you say, I'm not sure, you have to make it sound like Vance Joseph.
That's fair.
I'm not sure, guys.
That's fair.
I'm not sure.
All right, Cecil, you ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
Neutercane.
Neuter.
I didn't know this was a word until just now.
We're all 12.
Ooh, that ending could be
neutercane. Use it in a sentence, please.
Yeah. Is it a dog in the sentence?
Neutercane.
No, it's not dog.
Is it a special
Bob Barker
tool?
Right. Advocates for Neutercane brand neutering.
I put some Neutercane in my teammate's jockstrap. He was not happy about that.
He's still looking for it.
I'm trying to find a sentence.
This is a made-up word.
No, it's really not, I swear.
Spell Asper Cream. Neutercane. I'm still waiting on that heifer, Julio. Neutercane.
You don't have a sentence.
It has to do something with being neutered. It has to be.
Yeah.
No, it
has to be.
No, it's not. I'm looking at the definition, but I'm not going to read. I mean, I guess I could just
read it. You can read the definition.
Read the definition.
It is a cross between a tropical hurricane and a temporal zone common front storm.
I know how the cane is spelled, though, now. See, you shouldn't have read that.
Well, you
shouldn't
listen.
Have read it.
No, you should have.
Okay. And wait.
Yeah.
Neutercane.
You say N-U-E?
Come on.
Neuter is N-E-U.
N-E-U.
N-E-U. That's what I said.
You said U-E.
I have it written down.
You read it wrong. Play that back. He said,
I have it written down.
U-E.
I don't even have to play it back. I could grab it, but I know for a fact you said N-U-E.
You said N-U-E. I was like, what?
You said, yeah. I said N and you said, yeah.
Yeah, I said N was correct. No, you said U-E.
I have it written down. Why would I not read what I wrote down?
Because you can't even read that chicken scratching. What's the spelling of that?
You got it's E-U.
N-E-U-T-E-R-C-A-N-E.
Correct.
When he said it was like a hurricane, I knew how to spell the cane part.
Just not the neuter.
I know how to spell neuter. I wrote it down.
You said it wrong.
I must have misspoke. All right, what does he win for winning the spelling bee? Do we know?
Pride.
Yeah, I would have to say pride because it was a little, it took like four or five words to get one right.
And these are actual words from the National Spelling Bee?
From this year's Spelling Bee, yep.
Okay, I feel like Neutercane is the one that's like so easy. Those kids are like,
yeah.
Guys, really? Said, Tommy couldn't get Neutercane.
I studied for 8 months for Neutercane.
That's like nerd humor, right? Where those nerds are so smart, they make fun of you
right.
when you can't. So,
yeah.
Neutercane, what an idiot. Am I right, fellas? Yeah. All right. Okay. Thank you, Richie, for humiliating me.
N-U-E-T-E-R-C-A-N-E.
Awesome.
Yeah, you said N-U-E. Just did it. This proof. You said it.
I hate the proof.
You misread it.
N-U-E. I wrote it down, E-U. Let the record show. I know how to write it, but I don't know how to say it. Okay. Okay, Richie. Read the legal ID.
KKFN, KKF1, HD1, Longmont, Denver.
Longmont, Denver. Thank you. It's The Drive. It's Tommy Nalen. Cecil Lammy sitting in for DMAC. I hope he's having fun today. And I had fun today talking to Derek Wolf out at UCL Training Center, out at Dove Valley. Don't want him to get mad at me. Out at Dove Valley, Derek Wolf out there, one of the straightest shooters in the entire National Football League.
Right. You'd think by now, 8 years in the league, he'd be able to maybe not say exactly what's on his mind, but nah.
No, I think that's what he wants to do. I think he enjoys that. I think he relishes the fact that, like, oh, you want to know that? I'm going to tell you that. But it all depends on his mood. I've been around Derek Wolf 100 times. And there's sometimes Derek Wolf is like straight shooter, and other times he's like scares you. Well, me anyway, maybe not you.
Scares you.
Him mad one time.
With a question.
In the locker room. I pointed out something that he was wrong about, and then he scared me. So I don't do that anymore. Derek Wolf could be wrong about whatever. I'd be like, you're totally right. No. I was talking to Mitch Unrein. This was years ago after a game, right? We're in the locker room. Mitch and I are talking about Grover, Colorado, where I came from, right? You and DMAC are going to talk about Boston. I'm going to talk about Grover. Up there, it's around Eaton, Colorado, which is where Mitch Unrein's from.
Is there a lot to talk about with Grover?
Yes.
All right.
Tons. Nice. So it was cool that Mitch knew where I grew up and, you know, my high school girlfriend was from his hometown. So anyway, Derek Wolf interrupts us. He goes, I'm from a small town too. And we're like, how small? And he goes, 12,000. I just laughed. I was like, that's not small. Get out of here. There's like 100 people in Grover, if that.
Well, it's subjective. Derek Wolf, 12,000 to me is a small town.
What size town did you grow up in?
In Foxborough, there's probably 20,000 people. That's a small town.
That's not a small town. Get out of here, small town.
Well, there's no towns.
But you had stoplights.
I don't think there's many towns in Foxborough in Massachusetts that have 100 people.
Okay.
So,
well, then there's no small towns.
In Massachusetts, it would be small. For Massachusetts, it is.
This is overall, though. If you say you're from a small town, it better be small. Not like 12,000 people.
Well, I would think that's a small town.
Okay. Well, I would think not.
Well, next time you talk to Derek Wolf, you'll be saying, yes, you come from a small town just like me. If you want to get out alive.
Yes. I'm not going to disagree with anything that Derek Wolf says. But Derek Wolf today, and talking about Dalton Risner, I'm always curious about picking your brain about offensive line play, Tommy, because I want to know if Mike Munchak, if there's too much on his plate. Are we expecting him to, like he did in Pittsburgh, he turned that team around. They were the 25th ranked offensive line the year before Munchak. The first year Munchak was their offensive line coach, they were the fourth ranked offensive line. They went from giving up about 50 sacks on average, I think it was 47, to 25 sacks.
Was DeCastro his first year, the guard?
DeCastro was already there, I believe.
Okay.
I can double check on that. But I do know four of his top seven offensive linemen were undrafted.
Villanueva?
Mm-hmm. Was one
Ponce
of them.
Was drafted.
Yes. DeCastro, and so was DeCastro. They were the two high-round picks.
Was Ponce first round?
Yes. So they were the two premium picks on that offensive line.
Right.
But are we because we all are just kind of assuming he'll fix it, but is that the correct thing to assume?
I think the hope is a coach like that is here to get the five best players on the field working together. That's correcting an offensive line isn't so much about the separate parts, it's the sum of them. And as long as they're all working together, so it's about creating a method of communication amongst the guys. Because you can have five ragtag guys and throw them in there, but if they're all working together and you've identified the five guys work for your system, then it just comes down to just coaching them up and getting them all on the same page. Does that make sense? as far as...
So you have to have a cohesive unit.
Cohesive. And
I can spell that. I won't misspell it either.
Yeah, you C-H-O, something like that.
Cohesive. No, cohesive.
But that's what it's all about. That's what Alex Gibbs, when he came to Denver, was, yes, we had Zim, but Stank was, when he got here in 95, he was a 10th round pick. I was a 7th round pick. Habib was a 10th round pick. I think he was a D lineman out of Washington at the time. And then the right tackle was Broderick Thompson, who I don't think he was, he may not have been drafted. And then Tony Jones the next year, or 2 years later, Tony Jones got here and he was like a 13th round pick. So it wasn't like we were this banner crop of draft picks, but Alex has had a way of coaching us to get us all, you know, going the right way, literally and otherwise.
Did you know Broderick had passed?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Undrafted in 1983 out of Kansas. Denver Broncos, 1995, 1996.
Yeah,
passed at age 41.
Yeah, he motorcycle accident.
Oof. Okay.
Great dude. Brilliant. He used to take me aside. I was so nervous before games. And I was my second year. I was, you know, nothing. And he used to take me aside before games. This is after warm-ups. So we come back in the locker room. And he would just talk to me about not football, like random topics. And just kind of put my mind at ease. He was a great dude.
He was like purposely distracting you before the game.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't be worried. You wouldn't be nervous.
Not only was I not, and I didn't even know it was occurring, but there were fantastic topics. I can't remember the things we talked about, but there were like life topics, like what do you want your family to be? Things like that. And this is, I don't know, 8 minutes before kickoff.
Okay.
It was unique, but, and he was only here for a couple of years, but you could see the way that Alex coached us. It was, we were ragtag outside of Zim. We were all like nobodies. And, you know, he was able to figure out the best five guys to put there and work within his system. It didn't matter where you came from, where you're drafted, anything like that. And, you know, it worked.
He wasn't
like Alex Gibbs. People have this notion that he was this guru from a standpoint of technique and stuff, but it wasn't. His genius was everybody was running at the time. Most teams had zone blocking. His genius was the fact that we bought into him as the coach, treating us all like crap. It was like we banded together against him, but we rarely made mistakes. And if we made a mistake, all five of us were making the mistake. It wasn't like one guy just going rogue. But so that's Munchak's challenge, is to get McGovern, I think of him as a guard. So you have him playing center. You have an, you know, underperforming left tackle. You got a rookie left guard. We'll see what happens at right guard. If it's Larry, if he's healthy enough.
That's not his best position either.
No, he's left guard. And I thought Dalton Risner would be better served on the right side because he spent, you know, outside of playing center, he was always at the right side at K-State. So that's his challenge, is to get, and his biggest challenge to me is getting Garrett Bowles on board with this, with working well with others.
We're not asking him to do too much then?
Not from technique-wise. Because by the time you get to the NFL, you are what you are. I mean, how much help did DeGoogs there in Indianapolis? He's my former. He was a GA at Boston College when I was there. He was a Colts coach, the O-line coach. They fired him at the end of the year, but he got Nelson there. I mean, how much coaching did he actually do?
Set him up and let him go.
No, you set him up and you teach him where, you know, the terminology and the combination blocks and all that and pass protections and things like that. But for the most part, when guys get to the NFL, they should basically know how to block someone. It's very hard to teach. That's something that should be done in high school or college.
Well, Derek Wolfe and I are okay now.
Part of Garrett Bowles' problem to me is the fact that he's not confident in what he's doing. It's almost like he's confused about what to do before the snap. And that creates, you're either late or you're going the wrong way.
Do you know his biggest problem? His biggest problem is he lets bad plays stay with him. How do you change that?
I think he does. His biggest problem to me is he does stupid things, stupid penalties.
And then
his holding calls, it sticks in his craw. Some of his holding calls are so, like, avoidable.
He should get credit for a tackle.
The umpire is directly behind him, and he will literally throw Joey Bosa, like body slam him 3 yards from the ump. The ump has no choice but to call the holding when in reality, had he not done anything at all and just kind of tied him up and just stood there, it would have been a fantastic block. So it's just getting those mistakes out of the way.
How easy is that going to be to clean up?
That's easy because you can embarrass him on the film. You could just turn it on any game film and go, you got a touchdown call back on this play because you did this. This. It had no effect on the outcome of the play. And it was well after the play, there was no need to do this. As long as you do that in front of your peers, I think it'll have a bigger effect. That's why
shame is a powerful motivator.
It should be. It is.
And nothing wrong with it.
You don't want the red dot on you. Coaches all have those little lasers.
Uh-huh. Laser.
You don't want that red dot on you.
Pointing out to your peers.
Yes.
That you're terrible.
12 other guys in there, or however many old linemen they got right now. All watching
and
that.
And that's not going to turn him the other way mentally? He's not going to check out or get super upset about it?
Find someone else. Because if you can't handle that, if you can't handle the criticism on film of you during a game, because that's what they're watching right now. You're watching cut-ups from last year. You're watching that or you're watching the film from the OTAs. But a lot of the teaching going on, they might watch cut-ups of Pittsburgh too to see how they did it. Mm-hmm. But you're watching cut-ups of plays from last year. And if he's unable to handle that kind of criticism within your room, then you got to find another dude.
Should Garrett Bowles be reaching out to Villanueva or somebody from the Pittsburgh line and just, hey, fill me in. What's it like? What should I expect? Like, if he doesn't go work out with his teammates outside the building.
He's not working out with his old lineman. He's waving off coaching on the field. I doubt he's going to Mike Munchak and going, hey, do you have Villanueva's number? I want to call him and kind of pick his brain. It would be brilliant if he did that. Now, they're completely different players, but it would be awesome if he did that, if he had the humility to do that. But I don't think it's...
Why doesn't someone tell him to do that?
You can't. He's a grown man. I mean, here's his number. Call him. He has to be the one to reach out to go, hey, you know, I think it'd be a good idea if I talk to some of the guys you coached at Pittsburgh to see what's expected of me and to understand more. Because sometimes player to player is a lot easier. And it's a lot easier to talk to other players about certain things than it would be to the coach, especially a new coach who you don't really know all that well. But hearing it from another player is easier.
In a certain way, did you learn more from your teammates than you did from Alex Gibbs? In a way. Like, do you learn more from teammates than from
coaches?
Yes,
and I learned a lot more from film, from stealing things from Dermoni Dawson or Kevin Mawai or anything like that. I would try to take parts of other people's games. Now, there were certain things I couldn't do that those guys could do, but I was always trying to steal things technique-wise to kind of incorporate it because I needed all I could get. I mean, I wasn't like this physically dominating player, but you have to, but that goes with humility. When you're a first-round pick, you might not have that.
He should probably get that, or else it's going to be not for long. Not for long in Denver, or not for long in the league.
It's not going to be for long in training camp. I mean, we'll see pretty quick what he's made of, and if he's coachable at this point. It's up to him. But the development of Garrett Bowles is so important to the offense because the defense is stout. And the problem with the defense is that he has to block a guy like Bradley Chubb every day. And he's got these, there's a lot of swagger on that side of the ball in Denver. And he's got to, so what does that do to his psyche? You know, he's got to practice against these guys every day. He's probably going to lose a lot of the battles. It should come game day, but if he's not mentally strong enough to handle failure during practice, how's that going to translate to the games?
When he'll be facing lesser opponents in a lot of weeks.
He should be stepping out in the field and going, man, I thank God I'm not blocking Chubb today. Or, you know, Derek Wolf isn't, you know, bashing me in the head every practice. I get to go out and play against a lesser defense. I should feel pretty good. But I don't know if that's in his makeup.
And I don't know at this point if you can put it in his makeup.
No, it is what it is.
He is who he is.
But like I said, Chris Cooper, hopefully he can kind of mentor him. And
is Cooper the guy to tell him this stuff then?
He is.
Because we're all him-hawing around like, oh, he's a man. He should know how to do this. I agree with you. But there needs to be somebody close to him, his agent, whoever, that says, dude, if you don't get it this year, you will be gone. Maybe even this year. But definitely next year, they're not going to fifth-year option him unless he shows the strides that he needs to make. It's not for long for a reason.
I don't know.
Is it Chris?
I don't know who the person is in his life. It's not going to be his wife.
His agent?
It could be his agent because the agent will hear stuff from the team that will trickle down to him.
But agents are also afraid of losing their players to other agents, so they're sensitive on how they tell them.
Well, and the agent knows his client, and he knows Garrett Bowles, and probably understands that he's more fragile than some of his other players. So you have to be careful how that would be. To me, it would be Chris Cooper would make a lot of sense because he is a lot younger. He's of the same generation. He's not long removed from playing. So it seems like he would be the one that play the good cop to Munchak's bad cop if that were the relationship there. It's much easier to talk to someone that you know, almost like your peer almost.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, with other players, like if you were to reach out to Villanueva in Pittsburgh, it'd be much easier to talk to him than it would be to talk to your coach because he might be intimidated by Munchak. I mean, a Hall of Fame offensive lineman with great credentials coming here, it's a little intimidating. Alex Gibbs was extremely intimidating despite his stature. I mean, Alex Gibbs was probably 5'8 and 140 pounds. But the way he carried himself was 6'5, 300. He was very intimidating. So I would never go to Rick Dennison when he took over the offensive line was much more approachable. Alex Gibbs, not very many times would I go to him one-on-one to ask him much. Because it was hard. I'd rather ask Stink, or what do you think about this, or you know, a veteran player I could bounce things off of.
Mm-hmm. Garrett Bowles has to find that guy, whoever it is, Chris Cooper, agent, whatever. But if you get through to Garrett Bowles this year, now you're taking a great defense, a defense that you're even getting me more excited about. Like I'm out there watching them, I'm seeing some great stuff, and then I talk to you and like, maybe they could be even better than we think. But now you fix the offensive line.
Derek Wolf is saying that it reminds him of the 2015 defense.
Todd Davis said he said it's a high ceiling, but he wouldn't compare it.
Well, you got to go out and do it.
Right.
Well, we'll see how it plays out.
Right.
But it's a good comparison. It's a good bar for them to strive for. You think, is Bradley Chubb an upgrade from DeMarcus Ware? You can go player to player. You'd think a more seasoned Derek Wolf is better than Derek Wolf in 2015. Malik is, you know, for a fifth-round pick, that dude was a important piece of that team.
Is Adam Gotsis better than him, or Shelby Harris, or whoever? Zach Kerr, who we're going to talk about in the middle of the line? There's a couple of weaker spots.
Draymond Jones. I know the interior is lacking. Is Todd Davis better than Brandon Marshall at that point? Who else was inside then, linebacker-wise? Trying to remember that defense.
It wasn't Danny, was it?
Trevathan. Was he on that team?
There?
Was he in Chicago yet? Yeah, he was. That dude was. He was a good linebacker, man. He could run.
He's going to be a free agent next year. All I'm saying is, if you can bring him back, bring him back. Broncos 2012 to 2015.
All right, so he was there.
Yep. Started in the Super Bowl,
8 combined tackles recovered a crucial fumble that helped the Broncos defeat the Carolina Panthers 24-10. So, Danny, they don't have anybody better than Danny.
No.
Sorry.
No. But is Bradley Chubb, a young Bradley Chubb, healthier than DeMarcus Ware was? Not from a leadership standpoint. Mm-hmm. They've right. definitely lost a lot of leadership from that defense.
Is it a big deal that Derek Wolfe said today captain doesn't mean anything to him? Because I've complained for years that Derek Wolfe's never been a captain. Him and Chris Harris. Like, why in the world do you not have these guys as your captains? Derek Wolfe today said, I don't even care about that. Doesn't even matter. A bit. One bit. But with that lack of leadership, I'm like, Derek Wolfe and Chris Harris are the guys you can turn to. Do it the right way. Do it their way. Follow their lead.
And they're able to not only follow their lead, but they've earned the right to call other players out.
Yes.
And that's what a captain does. Not only do you set an example for younger players, this is how we do things here. This is Broncos defense right here. But to call guys out and say, that ain't good enough. What?
Vaughn doesn't call anybody out, though.
No. No.
It's not his way.
It's not his way.
No.
And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, you can't have 11 leaders. I mean,
But that's a guy with the C on his chest.
That would be.
Shouldn't this guy with the C on his chest be the guy that
sometimes
can say,
hey, the captain is the best player? I mean, can a player really be like, I'm just going to go out there and Vaughn set an example of how to rush a passer. I'm going to do what Vaughn does. No, it's impossible. So it's a tough comparison, but I mean, Vaughn is the face of the defense, but for as far as leadership goes, Chris Harris Jr.'s more a leader. Todd Davis is more of a leader.
He has been a captain.
Derek Wolfe.
Never been a captain. Should be a captain. But he doesn't care about it. I'm like,
I'm sure he would like the C in his chest. I think he's earned it by now. But you can't, you can't have 11 C's. That would be catastrophic because you'd have 11 guys sitting there arguing. You got to have like a couple alphas and everybody else.
You
got to
have the leaders. You got to have the followers.
Right.
As harsh as that may seem.
But Vaughn to me is not as great a player as he is. I mean, Hall of Fame, no doubter, but he's not. He doesn't command that presence, you know? So, I'm sure Derek Wolfe didn't want to come out and say, it really bothers me that I'm not captain. But I'm sure he'd like to be, and I think he's captain worthy. Because he gives you everything he has.
Is that why Fangio, I'm not saying Fangio called out Von Miller, but from day one, he's like, I think Von can be better. Which people found that to be incredulous. Like,
well,
I can't believe it.
What is he was asked about Vaughn, and is he supposed to say, no, he's good. We just need Vaughn to just
be Vaughn.
No, you're always asking every player. If you asked him a question about Derek Wolfe or Justin Simmons or Bryce Callahan, whatever the player he was asked about, yeah, he can play better. You always think your players can play better. You want to get the best out of your players. I don't think Joe Woods did that. Wade got the best out of his players.
We'll see if Vic Fangio can do that for the Denver Broncos. This defense is elite, and this offense has somebody really excited. We'll play the audio and tell you who next.